Hello, everyone. I'm Aaliyah Pavla, editor with Becker's Hospital Review. Thank you for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Jim Stevenson to discuss why pharmacy intelligence will drive the new healthcare normal. Jim Stevenson has extensive experience in pharmacy and medication management, having served in both academic and health system roles at major institutions, including the University of Michigan, where he was chief pharmacy officer for UM Health System and associate dean for clinical sciences at the University of Michigan College of Pharmacy. Prior to joining Omnicell in 2018, Dr. Stevenson served as president of Visant, a pharmacy consulting firm. He is a fellow of the American Society of Health System Pharmacists and has been recognized with numerous awards throughout his career. Jim, thank you for talking with us today.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Happy to be with you today.
With that, let's jump into the first topic in our conversation today. I would love if you could provide for our audience an overview of medication management and how it is changing for hospitals and health systems.
Sure. Well, medication management or the medication use process is one that involves a number of different steps as well as different stakeholders within health systems. And if you think about it, the medication management or medication use process goes all the way from the beginning where decisions are made about which drugs are going to be available within a health system through a formulary process, through the purchasing process, to receiving the product into the health system, having prescribers order the product, having it dispensed, distributed to the care unit where it's going to be administered, or in some cases to the home, and then the actual administration, and then monitoring and follow-up. And overlaying all that, there's a lot of work that's done to assure safety, efficiency. There's a lot of regulatory compliance concerns. So, and it's just not a pharmacy thing, as you could hear from the different steps in the medication use process. This involves, you know, pharmacy personnel, nurses, physicians, and other prescribers, as well as administrators. So it's always been a very complex process. How it's been changing, I think, over the last 5 to 10 years in particular, is that it's just increased substantially in its importance to health systems, primarily because of the increasing costs associated with medication therapy, and a lot of the regulatory requirements that have evolved around this, again, trying to assure regulatory compliance with rules on, in a number of areas, as well as, managing disparate systems that have come in place. One of the things that's been a challenge with technology is that technology from different sources doesn't always integrate well. So it creates a lot of handoffs and areas where there's an opportunity for inefficiency or errors to occur. So it's one that's really increasing in its the attention that's being placed on improving the medication management process.
Great, thank you. That's super helpful to know that, you know, medication management is just increasing in importance for health systems across the country and the world, really. But my next kind of question for you, I'd love to get into a little bit, is related to the COVID-19 pandemic. I'd love if you can describe some of the problems that were illuminated by the COVID-19 pandemic in the pharmacy realm.
Sure. Yeah, I think what we've all gone through has really highlighted the need for improved pharmacy intelligence and analytics. I'm not sure there were a number of new problems that were uncovered because of the pandemic, but certainly the challenges and problems that exist were magnified. And maybe I can mention a couple of these. The first one that comes to mind is really about the problem with drug shortages. This is nothing new. We've been dealing with drug shortages for quite some time, but as you can imagine, in the pandemic, there was a number of drugs where the use and the need for certain drugs increased very rapidly and consistently across the country. And this really aggravated the problem of drug shortages and made them even more serious than they were. And these are critical drugs that are used, opioids, neuromuscular blockers that are used for patients who need to go on ventilators, antibiotics, those sorts of things, anticoagulants, actually. Those are all really important in managing these COVID patients. And unfortunately, there were a number of drug shortages associated with that. The other couple of other things that I think came to light is that in order to manage a problem of the magnitude of COVID-19, you saw that there was a need to really manage supply chains across the health system, different sites within health systems, as well as between health systems. And actually, ideally, there should be a lot more coordination of the pharmaceutical supply chain across all stakeholders, not just the health systems, but the manufacturers, the wholesalers, and in some cases, the regulatory bodies as well. If you'd like, we can talk about some of the issues related to that. And I think the other problem that came up, and I think in pharmacy we see it as a potential opportunity, but we all had to move towards more virtual work. We had to find ways of using telehealth resources. We also were trying to find new ways that pharmacy personnel could really assist. And so you saw changes in regulatory approaches to allow pharmacists to have more ability to order testing, for example, taking advantage of the accessibility of pharmacies and pharmacists. There's also a lot of interest in when a vaccine is available, trying to make sure that we can mobilize all of our pharmacy access points around the country to help get these vaccines administered in a rapid manner to all of our population.
So that said, a lot of those challenges were magnified by the pandemic, the drug shortages, supply chain coordination, and kind of increasing those pharmacy personnel, just access points to pharmacy testing as well. Can you kind of explain to our audience what are some of the near-term and long-term strategies for recovery and stabilization post COVID-19, and the solutions for some of those challenges?
Sure, Leah. Yeah, I think some of the strategies that are going to come out of this that are going to be sustained over time, I think, will be maybe first I'll mention is the increased adoption of telehealth strategies. So one of the problems actually that health systems have had in managing population health initiatives is trying to make sure that they can reach out and communicate and monitor patients, particularly those with chronic conditions, as often as necessary to get them to the optimal endpoints for whatever disease they have, diabetes, hypertension, et cetera. And what's been very obvious to those who are in health system practice and working on population health initiatives is that it's really not possible to get to the optimal endpoints that we're trying to get by expecting patients to always come to us, to come to the health system, to make an appointment in a clinic and come in. So there's been more emphasis on trying to find ways of reaching out and communicating and contacting and monitoring those patients with other means. And, you know, in the past, telephonic has been one way of doing it, but there were a lot of restrictions and reimbursement barriers to using telehealth resources more extensively. And I think what's happened through the pandemic is that people have really realized the potential. They've ramped up their telehealth programs, and even some of the reimbursement restrictions have been relaxed. And I suspect that going forward, that's going to continue, so that it'll promote more use of telehealth in our systems long term. Another area I would mention is that I think we all realize that our contingency plans, our plans for disasters like this really need to be strengthened. And that includes making sure that we have adequate plans for how we can ramp up. You know, I think people in this country did an amazing job reacting to this and managing it, as, you know, in the best way that they possibly could. But I think everyone would acknowledge that they wish that we had had better advanced planning that would have made this a little bit more, make it easier, make it more effective. I think we also realized that we didn't have adequate stockpiles of critical drugs or supplies or equipment. You know, ventilators was the big thing. But I think, you know, when you look at pharmaceuticals in particular, we've really tried to streamline and squeeze this supply chain down so everything is just in time. Well, that's great from a financial efficiency perspective, but when you have a situation like this where there's a big surge in need, it means we may not have enough backup buffer capacity in the system to manage these types of situations. And so in many ways, whether it's beds, whether it's supplies, whether it's pharmaceuticals, I think what we're going to see is the government and health systems and everyone involved really thinking more about how do we assure that we have adequate surge capacity to handle these types of issues when they come up in the future. A third strategy, and again, this is a fairly a pharmacy-centric example, is that I mentioned that I think we're looking at pharmacies not only as a way to get drugs to patients, maybe one of the other trends I didn't mention is probably the use of more mail and other ways of getting the drugs to the patients in their home rather than having them necessarily have to come to the pharmacy. But I think the realization that pharmacies are very convenient healthcare access points. And so they've been used more and more over the last decade for administration of vaccines. But I think what you're going to see is an understanding of the capability of using these pharmacy locations for, as I mentioned earlier, testing, as well as vaccine and other types of therapeutic administration. So it's again, instead of trying to get everyone to make appointments and come into a health system, if we partner across our global health systems, we can find ways of providing better access to patients. So those are a few examples, I think, of strategies that we're going to see perpetuated after the pandemic is gone.
Absolutely. Those are really great points, especially the use of, you know, pharmacies and using that like brick and mortar to get patients the vaccines and drugs that they need. So the last kind of question and topic I wanted to explore today on this podcast is how can data intelligence support pharmacy initiatives across hospitals and health systems?
Yeah, that's a great question, Aaliyah. I think that one of the most important things that I've seen out of this is the emphasis on what could be or what we should be striving for as it relates to data intelligence around pharmaceuticals. Again, we can't be in a reactive mode all the time and really optimize outcomes, whether they're clinical outcomes, financial outcomes, efficiency. And often I think we've sort of covered up some of these deficiencies in systems by, you know, people just working very hard. I talked before about the lack of integration sometimes between systems. And so I think within Omnicell, where I work, we talk about this vision of an autonomous pharmacy, which is one that drives medication errors to zero, that it becomes very efficient and allows healthcare workers to practice at the top of their license, that they have the information they need to make the right decisions in a very efficient manner. And I think those principles are the things that really came to light, I think, from a data intelligence perspective with this pandemic. So I can go through a few examples or illustrations of that with you. So for example, I talked early on about shortages and how to plan for surges. Well, to really do that well, you need some tools, particularly you need some predictive analytics to know if there's a surge in this case, in COVID-19, what is it likely going to do in terms of your need for increased use of specific drugs? And what we found in looking at the data was when we looked at the hotspot areas that occurred early on, we were seeing for some drugs an increase in the need for these drugs of over 6 times the normal run rate of those drugs. So by having those data, what we could do is share that with others who may not be at their peak yet, that where COVID may be or other infectious diseases in the future, maybe just starting out, and use that data to use sort of these predictive analytics so that people can plan and prepare for what types of drugs and amounts of drugs they will need to be able to manage it when it really hits at their site. So it could really help mitigate shortages and help organizations plan for these surges. Another thing I think that we all learned is that to move to this more autonomous type of process that I described, and to be able to manage in these types of these crises, you've got to be able to move product across sites to better match supply and demand. You're going to have patients maybe who need certain drugs, and you might have enough drug in total within your health system, but it may be located at a different site within your health system. So you've got to have ways of basically having visibility to your entire health system's medication inventory across all care sites. And then by having that, you can more effectively deploy the resources to match the demand and the need where it is. So that's a tool that that we really found was helpful, that by using our ability to look into the automation that's out there, we could tell where we needed to have customers move their product so that they could more effectively and more efficiently treat their patients. Another example is in this crisis, as you know, health systems have really taken a big financial hit. And so there's a huge emphasis now, and it's going to continue, I think, for the next year, on cost management and financial performance as the health systems go through this and as they recover. And as I mentioned, pharmaceuticals, as you know, have become more and more expensive and a bigger part of the overall operating expense of a health system. And so there's a number of analytic tools and data intelligence that can be used to really help assure that the costs associated with these pharmaceuticals, whether it's searching for contract pricing or using programs like 340B in the most efficient and regulatory compliant manner. Those are important strategies in this cost management and financial performance, and they really can't be achieved without strong data intelligence tools. And then the last example I might give for you is that, we realized, I mentioned earlier on that one of the challenges with the medication use process is the increased regulatory compliance demands. And there's, and these are in areas like sterile compounding. There was some things associated with controlled substances where, because of the opioid crisis, there were limits placed on how much of an opioid product a manufacturer could produce. But then when we got into the pandemic, our need for the opioids went way up. So there had to be communication of these needs and use of data, in the case of this opioid example, to convince the DEA to relax some of those restrictions on the production of these drugs temporarily. But with the regulatory issues becoming so complex, and I'll use the example of sterile compounding in IV products. Often there are products being prepared in clean room environments all across the system, multiple sites, and it's a big burden on these systems to be able to monitor that everything is being done in a compliant manner across multiple sites at the same time. So again, by using data intelligence and tools, you're in a much better position to be able to monitor this regulatory compliance and correct any potential problems before they become significant enough that they impact patients.
Those are great points. Thank you for sharing those examples. I think clearly shows how data intelligence can really help providers mitigate some of these really complex challenges that were illuminated by the pandemic. So that concludes our podcast today. Thank you, Jim, so much for your time today and for your thought-provoking responses. We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Omnicell. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.